The Guardian. Football Weekly.
It's been another big weekend of football with a shock at Anfield, Hull in the top four, and Fatboy Ratface and the Cockney Mafia all under fire. Football Weekly asks, should we all cut Newcastle some slack? No, really. Elsewhere, there's the latest from Spain with Sid, the Bundesliga, and Italy too, with Milan reeling and cuddly coach Carlo Ancelotti with a lot on his plate. Possibly not for the first time. All that plus your posts and the return of the toughest competition in Europe. No, not the Be More of a Tit Than Raymond Dominic contest, the Champions League in Football Weekly. Now, hello everyone, and on board today, it's a very big welcome to Raphael Honigstein, who's just brought another little dose of honey into this world, haven't you? Little baby girl. You've been up late, haven't you?
I'm blushing now.
God bless.
Yeah, thank you.
Tom Lutz.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, Tom. Good to have you on board.
Yeah, good to be.
In your cap. And Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. You've been up late revising, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. I have to say, one poster was complaining this week about this extended how are you all intro that we do. He says, the fact that you're podcasting is evidence enough that you're all still breathing. A lot of hating on us out there in the
How
places.
Are you?
I'm very well, Raphael.
Yeah, so how are you, right. James?
I'm good.
Baz, you're
and
right?
your producer
yeah, I'm
Pete.
Not bad.
Producer Pete is very much, he's full of life. He's got a spring in his step. I was going to mention Liverpool Man U. We'll come on to that in a second. Newcastle Hull. A lot has happened since we last spoke. Ashley had those emergency talks late Friday night with Kevin Keegan, which sadly did not come to any fruit. Then there were the protests and the banners against the Cockney Mafia. And then Hull came to town. Then they lost against Hull. And now Ashley says he's selling 16 months after joining. Raphael, what are we to make of it all?
They're such an easy target, aren't they, Newcastle? It's almost, it almost seems to be unfair to mentioning them. I think, actually, in all this hubris and all this ridiculous stuff that comes out, one or two interesting things from Ashley in his long... phrased and worded statement that he's saying that he'll still have to pay for transfers that the people before him have made.
Mm. So he didn't do due diligence, basically.
Well, yes. I mean, that is one of the questions. You know, why didn't he look at the books before, and why was that a huge surprise for him? I mean, we've all known that Newcastle have been an absolute shambles in financial terms for years and have been run very poorly. So where's the big surprise?
When you read his statement, and I'm easily swayed. You do feel a bit sorry for the bloke.
And no, you don't.
Yeah, you do.
No, you don't.
He's sunk a huge amount in. He also raises the possibility that, hang on, maybe Wise and whatever the other chap's name is.
Jimenez.
Are they not doing so badly? I mean, Chisco scored at the weekend. Gutierrez, another Wise production. We loved him in his opening games. You know, is it unfair for Keegan to say, look, these people have to go? £12 million for James Milner is not a bad bit of business.
They're not doing that well because they're fifth from bottom now. So.
Well, yeah.
They got beaten by Hull. They're a laughing
stock. That's because their manager
again.
Walked out. That's their manager.
They're actually
out.
In so much of a laughing stock that right. there is talk that Freddie Shepherd might be getting re involved.
Yeah, he'll sort
them out. And Newcastle fans would actually not be that annoyed if he did.
I'm just asking.
That's how
Barry,
bad things are.
I'm just asking because actually, a lot of the problems this weekend can be put down to the fact that their manager walked out on them. So is it possible that this isn't actually entirely Ashley's fault and that he did actually try and help the club out in a very difficult position and Keegan has been a little bit of a diva?
Why did he appoint Kevin Keegan, who's a sensitive person anyway, and then go and basically knock him to the side by putting Dennis Wise in?
Right.
And if he'd had any knowledge about what Kevin Keegan's like, he wouldn't have appointed Dennis Wise, therefore making Kevin Keegan feel slighted. It was just horrible. You could just see this happening. Everybody knew this was going to happen. And it just shows how little research he did, along with the stuff he was saying about having to pay for transfers from other people.
Right, indeed. Respect to Phil Brown. They're up in the top four Champions League positions.
Absolutely, and I'm sure they'll stay there and qualify for the Champions League, set it on fire next year. Sorry, just to go back to the Newcastle thing. I've noticed that there seems to be a split even between the fans, in that there's a website, a Newcastle fan website called True Faith, who've had pops at me in the past, and they were always getting digs in at...
Did they spell your name
the
right?
The Guardians. Oh, they did spell my name wrong, actually, now that you mention it. They call me Glenn Dinning. But even they've sort of disassociated themselves with the sort of stereotypical fat, tattooed, poorly spelt banner-wielding Geordies who I think were going to protest. I don't know if they did or not on Saturday.
But oh, yeah, there was a huge protest.
They were going to do the hokey-cookie around St. James's Park.
You may scoff, Barry, but they did have a very well-organised protest, which I think has been, certainly seems to have been instrumental in Ashley making this statement and announcement that he's going to sell. They had nice banners up saying Cockney Mafia, with all the letters in the right place. And if you're wondering what that reference to Fat Boy and Rat Face, that again was banners held up inside St. James's Park.
And I have a picture here in front of me of some children with the letters of Kevin spray painted on their stomachs.
They're not particularly
stomachs.
Fat either. They're disappointed. Yeah.
Exactly.
Thin.
All right, let's leave
And they're all
those.
Standing in the right place.
There's plenty to chuckle about here without resorting to cheap stereotypes. we'll save the cheap stereotypes for later. Eh? The hint that I saw this morning was that Wise and Jimenez would indeed follow Ashley out the door when and if he sells to whoever's
well,
coming
I'm
in.
I'm sure they would. Yeah. I mean, who would keep him on?
Right.
And if he can get a buyer in the near future.
So if they can get a buyer in the near future, you know, Man City got a buyer. So Newcastle, yeah. I mean, that's the.
I mean,
the
obviously,
only thing
the whole Keegan,
situation.
The whole Keegan reconciliation meeting was all obviously all geared up towards having him back for that takeover, just as a figurehead. I'm sure Ashley said, you know, don't worry about what's happening next, but just be there so we get the cash in, and then you can negotiate another payoff for the fourth time. But Keegan wasn't having none of it. But I think the point about the manager is actually exactly right. I mean, it's such an unstable club. Not only does the owner want to sell, and even I think there's one or two people even you know who were looking at Premier League clubs have ruled themselves out because it's so chaotic, but also, of course, no manager. So it's really the worst possible takeover target ever.
Hmm. Interesting. And all a snip at £250 million. Let's have a quick chat about Liverpool, Manchester United. That man, Rafael Benitez, getting his first win ever against United, who, in the words of their manager, defended like a conference side. Who saw the game?
I saw the game.
Barry, go.
I did the minute-by-minute report. It was a massively entertaining game. And amazingly, with considerable prescience, I did predict goals and a Liverpool result. And goals duly arrived, and Liverpool won. But both goals that Liverpool scored were sort of gifts. They still played well. They fully deserved their win.
So were they lucky? Because for the first half hour, they were on the ropes, and then they came back in Sir Alex's word, bossed Man United out of it. So what was the turning point? It was just the own goal, was it, that swung it?
I'm not quite sure. They certainly did boss. Paul Scholes disappeared after about 25 minutes. It may as well not. And Liverpool took over midfield. I thought Yossi Benyoun played amazingly well. One of the best performances I've ever seen him give in a Liverpool shirt or any other shirt.
Well, Carrick going off, I think, also was a problem because they couldn't keep the ball. I mean, Liverpool were for once really pressing high up the pitch and taking a bit more risk and also going at them when they had the ball over the flanks. All the good stuff came from the left where there was Rooney and there was Anderson. Anderson then moved into the middle, but they were really a little bit lightweight up there on the right-hand side. And Liverpool exploited it perfectly.
Riera was out on the left, is that right? Did he have a good game?
He had a very good game, yeah. He didn't do anything spectacular in terms of, scoring a goal or creating any other goals, I think. But he was a constant danger and really unsettled United. And that thing was the key. In the second half, United didn't have any possession. And they seem to be overrun every time Liverpool were going forward. I've got a theory about Berbatov. It will probably sound stupid, but I have said that before they did sign him, that he would be not a good signing for United for the basic reason that I think the whole beauty, the whole key to their system last year was not having a central striker and playing a fluid system that was very, very difficult to attack against. For some reason, Ferguson was convinced that he needed a target man, even if it's not a target man with the back to goal, but sort of a focal point for attack again. And I think United are much easier to defend against as a result. Rooney was stuck on the right, didn't have any influence on the game at all. Berbatov is not the one sole striker. Eva, for me, is much more of a hanging second striker in an ideal world. So I don't think that Ferguson has helped this team with that signing at all. Apart from all the body language issues and the fact that Berbatov is not going to be the man who's going to rouse you once you're 1-2-0 that down.
I think that system they played last season, which was almost a 4-6-0, worked a lot more because they had Ronaldo as well, who scored the goals that a striker would normally score. But now without him, you can't really play that game, and they're suffering for that.
Well, yeah, indeed. He might be back early on Tuesday for the game against Villarreal. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second with Sid Lowe.
You would have to worry about where Wayne Rooney is going to fit in the cosmic scheme of things for United, because he was stranded out on the right wing for the whole game the other day. He had no input, didn't look happy. And assuming that Berbatov is going to start every game when he's fit, and he will, considering the amount of money they paid for him, what is this Rooney's destiny, to be stranded out in the right wing? And if so, you'd imagine he wouldn't put up with it for much longer and would angle for a move elsewhere.
Newcastle.
Of course.
He could manage Newcastle.
Listen, we should just say, well done to Benitez. We've hammered on about how United have lost the plot tactically, etc. But excellent stuff from Liverpool without, of course, Steven Gerrard, who came on and very nearly helped United back into the game, and Fernando Torres.
It's interesting that England and Liverpool's two best performances in a very long time came when Steven Gerrard was playing no part in proceedings whatsoever. I'm not suggesting for a moment that he's the cause of all their problems, but it can hardly be coincidence that...
If it walks like a duck and quacks
exactly.
like a duck. OK, well, listen, we must move on. Arsenal, a huge win for them against Blackburn. 8 goals conceded in 2 games now for Blackburn. Adebayor has now scored 3 hat-tricks since the start of last season. It's more than anybody else. Anybody want to throw in anything else about the Arsenal performance?
Well, and he's done it not against Derby, so...
Yeah, very impressive.
You haven't been talking to your close personal friend, the Blackburn manager, Paul Ince?
I haven't, actually, no.
I think we saw a thing, mark things to come for Walcott. He got clattered after about 8 minutes by Simpson in that Blackburn game, and I think he's going to get a lot more of that now. His name's a bit bigger as well.
Meanwhile, Arsene Wenger bringing out Jack Wilshere, 16 years old and 256 days, the youngest ever league footballer for Arsenal. I bring them out slowly, these English players, smiled Wenger. He's another one who will soon play for you, he smiled in his Wenger-ish fashion. Well done to him. Ooh, here's another big game, because there were plenty of them. Who saw the action at the Eastlands? Chelsea beating Man City. Raphael, it's you again.
Yes.
Were you there?
I spent the whole of Saturday on the sofa watching 3 games back-to-back, much to the delight of my wife, of course.
Yeah.
It was great. But it's my job, so I have to do it.
Exactly. And, Lampard was brilliant, eh?
Lampard was very good. Him and Deco, they really run the show. And poor Didi Hamann, who's a lovely chap, didn't quite have the legs, I think, to keep up with them in the second half. But it was quite amazing how Chelsea just turned it around after going down so early. Really, by the time the game was sort of, 60, 70 minutes into it, there was only one team on the pitch. They were really quite good.
It's the kind of game maybe last season you could see them struggling to get back a draw and then just settling for it. But there they just, they ran away with it in the second half.
I thought Manchester City were very poor, though. And I don't know if their new sheikh owners are expecting, a Champions League finish this year, but they're not going to get one. City need at least 2 midfielders, a couple of defenders before they're going to be challenging for a top 4 position.
I think it's interesting psychology, because obviously after the match, Hughes was talking about the fact that they only had one day in the transfer window, and of course he's going to spend big in January, and that's going to be the running story for the end of this half of the season. And you just wonder what sort of impact that will have on big sections of the squad, who know that they're only really keeping the shirt warm for the next guy. And I don't think that's not necessarily the most motivating kind of situation.
Yeah.
It is actually true. Speaking to an agent friend of mine, this list with like 10, 15 star names actually does go around and has gone out to lots of agents with the expressed mandate to get them signed. So
do you know
it's
what
not
names
just fantasy.
On there?
Well, I mean, Villa's on it, Schweinsteiger's on it, Podolski's on it. You know, Gomez had a very serious offer on the table. Huntelaar had a very serious offer on the table back in August or the first day of September. And they're going to try again for all of these players. So I think it's a bit unsettling for the squad in place.
Mm. Although their best players on Saturday, Man City were Wright, Phillips and Ireland, who are kind of hometown.
Indeed so. Well, there you go. Man City. Chelsea, meanwhile, losing John Terry, all sorts of controversy over that. They will appeal. Will they get him back for the United game next weekend?
I would doubt it.
Yeah, I would doubt it too. Raphael?
I don't think they have any grounds to appeal because it's a matter of opinion. I don't think it was a clear cut. You could say, there was one man covering, but I don't think that's enough to say that the red card was wrongly awarded as such. I think it's a matter of opinion, and therefore they're going to stick with the referee.
It's lovely to see how well he took the dismissal as well.
Well, that's in his new role as ambassador for the respect campaign.
Well, like Scolari was interviewed after the game, and they said, do you think it was sending off? And he said, it doesn't matter what, I think it's the ref's decision. And that's exactly what you want to hear.
Mm.
Sorry, on the subject of Terry against it off, Vidic obviously got sent off for United as well. I would say Vidic is a bigger loss for United than Terry is for Chelsea.
No, fair point.
Terry, he wouldn't actually be in my Chelsea first 11, but Paul Doyle, I think, is also a keen advocate that he's not the best player, centre-half of the club, never mind his own country.
Hmm. I was wondering where you were going with that for a second.
So was I. Paul
Doyle would prefer Tevez, I'm sure.
Just to wrap things up on the Premier League front, you had Zaki getting his fifth goal in five for Wigan against Sunderland. Everton winning at Stoke City despite that continued use of long throw-ins.
Wasn't that a great game? Did you see it?
I saw badly edited highlights. Was it a good
game? I thoroughly enjoyed that game. Yeah. I sat down and wasn't sort of expecting much, I have to say, but it was really, really good. And interesting that I see in the paper today, Tony Pulis has had to come out and defend his tactics again, you know, defend the use of the long throw. But I think if you've got a weapon like that in your artillery, why on earth not exploit it?
Indeed so, Barry. West Brom beat West Ham. Oh, sorry, go on then, Tom.
I was just going to say it's quite nice to see teams coming up and actually attacking.
Yeah.
Like last season, the two promoted sides that went down, Derby and Birmingham, by this side, were averaging less than a goal a game, whereas like Hull, Stoke, West Brom are all going out and they're averaging more than a goal a game. It's a good sign.
Very interesting point. West Ham, whose misery deepens, their shirt sponsorship deal collapsing with the travel firm XL.
My mother
was
a victim of the XL collapse. Right. She herself and her sister were in holidays in Lanzarote.
Right.
And they got stranded briefly. They're home now.
So. Oh, okay. 85,000 apparently involved in a mass airlift to bring them all home. And of course, the crisis hitting home at Upton Park as well, where kit people had to sew patches over the sign saying XL. The only man wearing XL on his shirt, indeed, on Sunday, Saturday was Barry. Dean Ashton, go on.
Ah, very good.
Yeah. Okay, but hey, hell of a way for Gianfranco Zola to find the club. And I wonder how long that chirpy little smile will be staying on his Italian face.
That. Do you know Mr. Zola?
No, I haven't seen him for ages, actually.
Have you met him, though?
Yes.
Nice fellow.
Yeah, I mean, this just in, Gianfranco Zola in nice man shocker. Yeah, he's a lovely bloke. Good manager? I have no idea.
I'm not sure he does.
But he is a very nice chap, very unassuming, which is a great managerial trait, and very rarely. I've never seen
is
him
it a sign of the
with anyone.
Is it a sign of the times that now assistant managers are worth £5 million in the transfer market?
Is that man Steve Clark? Is that what they're asking
for?
Yeah. £5 million?
Yeah. Not bad.
I think they'll be looking for somebody else then, West Ham.
Maybe. One question I have, out of pure ignorance. Why do West Brom not have a shirt sponsor?
Because the Building Society... Who was there?
And they give money to a hospice.
The sound of...
Scratching heads.
No, is that Villa?
Okay.
I think they had a Building Society. Leave all this in, Pete. The listeners have a right to know, or indeed in this case not know, I think they had a Building Society that... Did they have financial trouble?
They're always having financial problems.
I'm prepared to put my head on the block and say, I don't know why West Brom don't have a shirt sponsor.
Right, producer Pete, any
ideas? If anyone out there does, please feel free to let us know.
Jesus, he does. It was the West Bromwich Building Society, but it's not anymore and he doesn't know why. But when producer Pete gets his own podcast and cuts out the middle man, the world will be a simpler place. Right, that's more than enough. Let's have a quick little musical jingle thing, and then we'll be speaking to Sid Lowe in Spain on all sorts of top issues.
Football Weekly with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
Now, while you were listening to that, we just
how Mazo Mahmoud, that News of the World guy, is bringing out his confessions of a fake sheikh.
Yep.
Now,
yes,
that obviously England's third city is overrun by fake sheikhs, and no one will take his mask seriously anymore.
It is funny, in answer to your question, Raphael. Now, we've just been listening to Sid Lowe's answering machine, and a splendid thing it is too. Raphael Honigstein, therefore, let's move Bundesliga up to its rightful place in our European hierarchy. Because it's been a top weekend in the Bundesliga, isn't it? Notably, Schalke the Borussia Dortmund derby thing.
Absolutely sublime and surreal derby at the same time. Schalke 3-0 up after, I think, 70 minutes. And this being Schalke, of course, you can guess the outcome.
This is away to Borussia Dortmund.
Away to Dortmund, yes. And the fiercest, really, I mean, without exaggeration, the fiercest, most hotly contested derby in Germany, bar a mile. They're 3-0 up. Kurani has a glorious chance to make a 4. He misses, as only he can. And then slowly but surely, everything crumbles and collapses. And by the time the game has reached the 89th minute, it's 3-2. Schalke have had two players sent off, and Dortmund get a penalty and score. And then with 5 seconds to go, the fourth referee comes up and no doubt would lift double figures on his little board. But referee blows the whistle. Didn't want anymore because he'd made so many mistakes and had gotten so much stick on the pitch from both sets of players. You know, the sendings off, a couple of offsides.
So they had no time added on whatsoever?
No time added on. Game finished five seconds early.
Has there been any kind of fallout for him not adding?
No, it's a German referee, you know, punctuality and all that stuff. They like to keep things simple. And I mean, this is actually a scourge of the Bundesliga that, you know, you do get a lot of referees who love to blow the whistle really early, regardless of the way the games went. I mean, there were 5 substitutions, 2 penalties, 2 sendings off, 6 goals, minus 5 seconds extra time.
Wow.
And is this because he's got Sun lounger reserved by a swimming pool.
A towel. He's already got a towel out.
They lose the league leadership, Schalke.
They did throw it all away because of that result. And Bayern, of course, as you expect them, with an easy win away to Cologne, but also quite surreal scenes there because Lukas Podolski, who's been flirting with a move back to Cologne all the time, basically since day one when he moved to Bayern, has been saying, "Oh, I'd love to go back." Spent most of the game on the bench, signing autographs to Cologne fans. When he started his warm-up lap, you got standing ovations by the Cologne fans. And of course, he came on with a few minutes to go and scored Bayern's third goal.
Who got the other two?
Luca Toni.
Well, that is surreal.
Yes. Yeah. No, come on. And of course, just as we saw in the Euros, he refused to celebrate. He buried his head in the ground. But still, the Cologne fans applauded him because they love him so much.
Why would he want to go back to Cologne? They're not exactly like a massive club, are they?
No, they're massive in Cologne. And I think that's why it suits him, because he is a bit of a small-town boy.
Werder Bremen taking on the first ever Cypriot team to reach the group stages of the Champions League. That's on Tuesday. And how did Werder get on the weekend?
Werder had a very easy game against Cottbus. It was 3-0. This should have been 6 or 7. Route 1. No, not Route 1, but one-way football, that's the word. And two fantastic goals. Long-range shots from Diego and Frings. Mm. But I think Bremen would be, once again, very entertaining, but possibly a doomed participant in the Champions League, because for all their brilliant attacking football, they can't defend to save their lives, which is the very thing that you don't want in Europe.
And Bayern Munich, meanwhile, start on Wednesday away to Steaua Bucharest.
Yes, it's a tough group. I think the German public, the natural reaction was to say, "Oh, it's a great group for Bayern." Yeah, Lyon, Fiorentina, never heard of them, and some Romanians. But they're really, really good teams. And I think it's going to be tough. And Michael Ballack made a good point, I think, yesterday, where he said, you know, Bayern on the day can really beat anyone, but probably getting out the group will be the trickiest job for them, because I think Fiorentina and Lyon are the sort of sides that could give them trouble.
Well, thank you for that, Raphael, for that top Bundesliga roundup. I'm just being told by producer Pete that it's still very much the Telefonica answering machine. So here comes Serie A coverage. Been an interesting weekend in Italy, only the second of the season. Susie Campanali, now on line one to tell us more. Hi, Susie.
Hello, boys.
Yeah, indeed. Interesting, the results this weekend. Inter got a jammy win again at home to Catania, but I guess the big story are those crazy folk at Milan.
Yeah, unfortunately, they just can't seem to win or score goals, despite putting more strikers on than is entirely necessary.
Well, the pre-season was filled with such delights as the 5-0 defeat to Chelsea and the 1-0 defeat to City. They then lost at home to New Boys Bologna in the opener, 2-0 midweek to Swiss side Lugano, and then another 2-0 now to Genoa. How long has Ancelotti got?
Well, that depends. I think a great deal will depend on how the UEFA Cup goes on Thursday. They got another Swiss side, which doesn't bode well. They've got Zurich. But they've played 8 games since the end of July and lost 7 of them. By anyone's standards, that's not good. Admittedly, though, Ancelotti has not really had the team with him at all, because through various injuries, internationals, Olympics, and transfers, late transfers, he hasn't really had the team with him for training. So basically, they're doing now on the field in Serie A what they should have been doing during the summer.
So Ronaldo and Shevchenko got taken off after 45 minutes in the Genoa game. Ronaldinho, was he really bad?
He wasn't that bad, but he didn't exactly do very much. To be honest, they played the trident of the three Ballon d'Or winners, Kaká, Ronaldinho and Shevchenko. And they couldn't really combine at all. Kaká is not 100% fit, and you can tell, because Kaká's greatest strength is his change of pace. If he doesn't have that, he can't go past people. So he's missing that. Ronaldinho only did a free kick, that was about it. And Shevchenko is still missing chances from 6 yards.
Oh, bless. Every year, of course, we talk about how Ancelotti's not going to eat his Christmas pudding at Milan and how he'll be replaced. I just get the sense that this time around it is different with the likes of Donadoni, Frank Rijkaard, and above all, perhaps, Billy Costa-Curta waiting in the wings. There you go. They've got Zurich then on Thursday in the UEFA Cup, and then next week they take on a Lazio team who are top of the league and looking absolutely brilliant. Don't know if you caught their game against Sampdoria Sunday?
I did. Zarate scored a fantastic goal. Wonderful curler in off the crossbar. And Pandev scored again. So they're doing remarkably well. Everyone expected Lazio to struggle horribly this season. But on the quiet, they've just gone about their business and are now leading the table with the mighty Atalanta.
Mm, indeed. Zarate, the new Beppe Signori. That's my. I thought he looked fantastic. He scored 3 in 2 games for them.
Yeah.
And what else then? Napoli coming back from 1-0 down at home to Fiorentina for a 2-1 win. They're for real, aren't they, Napoli?
They really are. But I've seen that from the end of last season, to be honest with you. And over the summer, they've only strengthened. Lavezzi was again fantastic. And he had to tell the fans not to compare him to Diego Maradona, despite the obvious comparisons, because he is fantastic. Unfortunately, he can't seem to score very much, but he can set goals up like nobody else.
Right. And Hamzic, who Irish viewers will recall. I can't remember if it's Northern or Southern Irish. Which is it, Barry? Who did Slovakia play the other day?
They played Northern Ireland and beat them.
All right, there you go, with a goal from Hamzic. And what about Roma then and Palermo?
Roma are having a terrible time. They are second only to Milan in the embarrassment stakes at the moment. They have 1 point from 2 games and they lost 3-1 at Palermo, who had just fired their coach after 1 game and brought in the new man, Ballardini. So they're having a dreadful time. And now they're going into the Champions League against the famous Cluj.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Very good. Well, that's what awaits Roma. Panathinaikos hosting Inter Milan in Group B. Juventus, meanwhile, who beat Udinese late on Sunday, plays Zenit St. Petersburg. Tough group there in Juve. And Lyon will be hosting Fiorentina. So some tough games there for the Italians.
Right, do you want to hear about Mourinho?
Oh, yeah, go on. Tell us about Mourinho, then.
He's been arrogant, shock horror. And he said that they would have beaten Catania even if he had been in goal, and they should have won 5-1, which prompted the Catania director, Lomonaco, to say, Mourinho is a man who should be punched in the teeth.
Well,
I should say that I have actually played against Jose Mourinho when he was in goal. Oh, yeah. This is not a joke, and he was quite decent before he was stretched off with a pulled hamstring.
Right.
Did you score past him?
How do you pull a hamstring as a goalkeeper? It's not an easy
He made a save against the Evening Standard, Chelsea reporter.
Oh, right.
Paid for it with a torn hamstring.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed, Susie.
My pleasure.
Susie Campanile there. And, well, you know what? I think we've now finally got hold of Sid Lowe. So since he made us hang around, let's make him stew a little bit of a musical sting, producer Pete, and then we'll go with the latest from the Liga. Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Sid. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm not sure that the Catalans will take too kindly to you saying Sid Lowe in Spain, because I'm actually in Catalonia this week.
Ah, yeah, interesting. Good point, good point. Listen, I'm not sure what to start with, because it's been a busy time in Spain, and of course we want to hear about Villarreal, and we're taking on United and that. But go on, let's start with Barcelona. You presumably you were watching their 1-1 draw at home to Racing Santander, were you?
Yeah, I was. They were kind of classic Barcelona in a way, in the after the game there was a feeling that they'd done it to win. They certainly were the better side. I mean, they had 19 shots and Rafinha had one. And obviously, if this was just a one-off, if this had just happened on one occasion, Barcelona completely dominating a team and not getting the result, then everyone would say, well, no big deal, it will be great next time. And certainly that's the message that Pep Guardiola and some of the Barca players were trying to put forward after the game. The problem is, of course, that it's such a familiar scene for them, and dominating a team, creating chances, wasting chances, and then being caught by a really soft goal at the other end is nothing new. So for some fans, that's really quite worrying, because although, you know, for half an hour or so, Barca were very good indeed, for the rest of the game, they were hideously flat. I get the feeling sometimes they almost find it too easy, and it just doesn't have the pace and the aggression that it needs to have sometimes, Barca's game.
Interesting. They lost Kleb, didn't they? Who's going to be out for, what, three weeks or something?
It looks like it's going to be about 3 or 4 weeks, yeah. It was a really bad challenge by a guy called Pinillos who hit him pretty hard, and Kleb was kind of turning at the time. So it seems that he's essentially done a ligament sprain, and it looks like it's going to be about 3 or 4 weeks. He was playing okay. I mean, I wouldn't go any further than that, but he's done a couple of quite nice runs, and it's a real blow for him, of course, because I think he recognises that he's come to a side where he probably doesn't have an automatic starting place, so really needed to, you know, to make an impact, and obviously didn't need to end up injured.
Mm. Sid, do you think that Barcelona are beginning to regret the fact that they didn't really do more to get rid of Eto and Henry in the summer?
Well, it's interesting, because I think with Samuel Eto'o, they were actually in a way kind of almost patting themselves on the back, because it was kind of...
You were patting them on the back, Sid.
Yeah, and I was as well, absolutely, because it was an inadvertent success, because, of course, they tried to get rid of Eto'o, and really and truly, particularly as they failed to get a replacement, you know, they didn't get Adebayor, they didn't get Trezeguet, they didn't get Benzema, then keeping Eto'o was definitely the right thing to do, definitely the best goal scorer on the side, but that doesn't change the fact that it is true that right now there's something not quite right about Eto'o. He looked horribly off the pace last night. His finishing on the two occasions when he had good chances wasn't good. Positionally, he seemed not right as well. It reminded me a bit of Eto'o's performance against Man United in the Champions League last year, where he just looked like he wasn't a goal scorer anymore. The case of Omri is far more significant, though. I think there's a belief that Eto'o will come good. The case of Omri, as I say, much, much more significant, because he's just not playing well. He was left out of the squad on the morning of the game on Saturday, and there was a sense that you know, kind of, well, maybe this is building up to the Champions League, maybe he's a bit tired because he played with France, and that was the message that Guardiola's number two tried to put out, and then when Guardiola was asked about it, he said, no, it was a tactical decision.
Mm. Now, listen, meanwhile, Real Madrid did get a victory. What was that? 4-3 against Numancia. And they've got the first ever Belarusian team. How do you say this? Is it Bati or Bachi?
I have no idea how they say it. I can tell you how the Spanish are saying it.
How are they saying it?
Well, they're calling it Bati, yeah.
But there's no
guarantee that that's correct.
All right, and this is presumably the biggest game ever in Bati's history, no? Against,
well, I would guess so. As not being an expert on Belarusian football, I can tell you, perhaps they've played in all sorts of great places. Real Madrid were strange yesterday. You know, they're kind of, and they have been for a couple of years now, the reverse of Barcelona. So Barcelona play loads and loads of football, keep the ball brilliantly, appear to be a good side, but just don't score goals. Madrid seems to kind of not do anything in particular and score loads of goals. And yesterday, two of their goals were, well, one was an own goal and one was a deflection. They do have Madrid an incredible ability to get something out of not very much. And the one thing, though, of course, that will worry him is that defensively, they were absolutely appalling yesterday, Real Madrid. But that's not surprising, because Metzelder was playing.
Sid, I was at home on Saturday night watching Sevilla play Sporting Gijon. Left the house, it was 0-0, got to the pub about 5 minutes later, and it was, I think, about 7-5 or something. That, talk us through, that was a great game.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience because I'd been in a Camp Nou. I then went to a bar in a hotel just around the corner from the Camp Nou, and got into the bar just in time to see it was 2-1, went to the bar to get a drink, came back, and there was two more goals. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was 3-3 at half-time. And then Canute got the fourth in the second half to allow Sevilla to win 4-3. It does sort of fit with what Sevilla have been for the last few years. Great going forward, but their defence, certainly since Javier Navarro has been out injured, which he has been for last year, is pretty poor. And rather than claiming it was a great game, I think, truth be told, it was two defences that were absolutely horrible.
Now, looking down my list of Spanish things here, Atletico Madrid, who got beaten by Valladolid, are going to be away to PSV. And you've got Real Madrid Barcelona taking on Sporting, who got two wins from two in the Portuguese Superliga. And then what about this Man United Villarreal business? Aztec Footy saying, can you ask Sid what Villarreal fans think of Jose Altidore? He looked lively in the second half. Can they upset a misfiring Man U in the League of Mushrooms? Not sure what he means.
Champignon. Quite right. A lot of Spaniards have taken calling it League of Mushrooms. I think there is a sense at Villarreal that, truth be told, they're not necessarily going to Old Trafford to win. I mean, obviously, if they can win, they'll take that. But there's a very clear sense that while Villarreal are very lauded in Spain for being a side that keep possession nicely, play very, very good football, they've got technical ability throughout the team. You know, there virtually isn't a player, with the possible exception of Emilson, who's really good on the ball. But when they got to the Champions League semi-final, was it 3 years ago now? I think one of the big myths in Spain, at least, was that Villarreal were this great footballing team. In the Champions League, at least, what they did was protect themselves very well and win a lot of games from set plays. And certainly the fact that people like Arrua Verena, who was a fullback, was scoring winning goals. Of course, Riquelme was very, very important to them. So they will be much more cautious in the Champions League, and they will go to Old Trafford to try and make it difficult for Man United. But unlike some teams, that's difficult for Man United on the basis of keeping possession and trying to stop Man United having the ball, rather than what obviously a lot of teams would do, which is go there and try and kick lumps out of Man United and be very defensive. So I think it will be a cautious Villarreal, but they've certainly got the talent. And Altidore, he came on yesterday and looked pretty lively. He's very, very strong. He's very quick. I think he's still only 18, so he's certainly one that I think most people at Villarreal, at the club, and certainly people I was speaking to yesterday, think that he actually won't play a huge part this season.
Yeah, OK. And Cristiano Ronaldo may play a part in Wednesday's game. Apparently he's going to be back early from injury for that. He, in the meantime, picked up the golden boot for his 31 goals on Sunday in his native Madeira. And he announced that he'd changed football a little, but he changed football with all those goals. Usually strikers win this and I'm a winger, he says. And he also talked about the fact that he should win the Ballon d'Or and the World Player of the Year, which clears those mysteries up. I am the best candidate for the other prizes. He said Cristiano Ronaldo is the best candidate for the other prizes. I think I've been the most consistent, he said, switching informally into the first person, and the best player. And over time, I want to enter the book of the all-time best players. And he says he doesn't feel a hostile reception from the fans that he tried to leave over the summer. I'm already in the history of the club, he says. When I play again, the fans will love me. Again, I don't want to give the impression that he's in any way conceited or antipathetic. I probably didn't read that with the necessary charm that he lent those words.
Probably also get the award for most modest man in Britain.
Yeah, indeed. Although there's some competition for that. Hey, Barry.
He is.
Yeah, certainly is. Now, Sid, that was top as ever, and I hope you'll be around on Thursday for us to chat to you then.
Yeah, hope so.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sid.
Cheers.
Now, well, there are one or two other games that we might want to touch. Celtic are taking on Aalborg. Bruce Rioch taking on Gordon Strachan, of course. And Celtic's are very strong at home. Tom, how do you see this one going?
Yeah, they'll be AAB or whatever they're called, like ninth in a 12-team division in Denmark. So they're not exactly setting the Danish Premier League alike.
Not. Okay. What else in the Champions League? Anything else? Anything else there at all? Probably there's loads of other stuff we're missing. Porto, Fenerbahce, that would be interesting.
I find it very difficult to get excited about
the opening games,
first group stages of the Champions
League. Like
the
first episode of The
Wire.
Even
more difficult to get excited about the first round of games in the first.
All right, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll have lots to be excited about come Thursday. Before we put their lid on this podcast, though. We should just talk about posts. Mike65IE, great little moniker there, leading the many there who are saying that the new blog suck a big one, no question. I'd love to have a quiet word, or a quiet word, as Mike says, with whoever thought it'd be an improvement on the old ones, which were also pants, it should be said, but at least they loaded instantly on a single page. Tom Lutz, what's the story vis-a-vis?
Today, there'll be a slightly different look to the blog, although people know that by the time they read this site. There's no point in saying that.
All right, but
they won't actually be reading this, will they, Tom? They'll be listening to it.
No, but they'll be reading, the post.
Can you believe
the blog.
Every week we go through this technically. Kind of stuff. Right. Tom, sorry, and then what happens further down the line?
It's being redesigned and it looked brilliant.
Is that because of pressure?
It was going to be redesigned.
It always was.
This is like a temporary holding blog, and then it's going to look... Honestly, if you see what it's going to look like.
What's it going to look like, Tom?
We're all very excited about it.
Yeah.
Sean Ingle is beside himself.
Right.
Yeah. But he had to stay off last week because he was so excited.
That's
how. Doctors advised him to avoid any further contact.
He had to go to New York because he was so excited.
Right. Put an Atlantic between you and the new blog. Vomiting Meerkat, who is one of the few people who reckons the new blog format is actually better.
Oh, good.
But you can't trust his judgment because he says, pod's still rubbish, though. Are you guys on Mogadons there? I have to say, you're probably right, but if you're posting...
It's just not what it used to be.
Do tell us why.
Send us some gags.
No, don't encourage them.
No, but if you're going to say something, I mean, I just get depressed when I read this and it says, this isn't as good as...
If you don't like it, don't bloody listen.
Yeah, but this
to
comes
it.
From There's a man who loves the new blog.
There's lots of... Just don't whinge about it. Just All listen right, to something else.
All right, well, listen, lots of other people posting in with other things. Postmaster General reckons that Paul's suggestion about goalkeepers not being allowed to catch the ball is the best contribution to the pod since its inception. There you go.
See, there is good stuff going on.
Yeah, there you go. Albania, somebody wanting us to talk about Albania, how they're top of their group. Yeah, right, fine. Joey Cunningham, how come not one broadcaster has made light, I think he means brought to light, the political implications of the United Arab Emirates royal family having a controlling share in Manchester City? This is all that business of Tal Ben-Haim not being allowed to set foot as an Israeli citizen in UAE, so when Man City go over there for their training camps or friendlies, etc., they're going to have a bit of a diplomatic problem.
Well,
with that,
technically now, Tal Ben-Haim doesn't exist, does he? As was shown, I think he. Manchester City's new owners don't recognise Israelis.
Okay.
As far as they're concerned, Tal Ben-Haim doesn't exist.
Cameron 10 says, James, what's the latest? And I think Cameron 10 speaks for all of you. What's the latest on Serie A's TV rights? Who is going to show Serie A this season? Apparently Channel 5 has scrapped it. This just in. Yeah, Channel 5 didn't continue with their coverage, which I know is a big shame. And I did inadvertently announce, based on the fact that the broadcaster had told me that they had the rights.
This is a bit like the Rubinho shirt coming up on a Chelsea website, destroying the whole deal.
Well, yeah, we talked about the logistics of how the channel was going to do it. And then it turned out that it had been announced within the company as being a confirmed deal, and it wasn't confirmed. And I'm not sure what the issue is. I've heard one story about what the issue is, but that doesn't seem correct to me. But I think, again, that it is a situation that is evolving. The fact that the season is up and running and nothing's happened doesn't necessarily mean that nothing will happen. But I'm hoping that book...
Your agent is all over it, I'd say.
No, well, I mean, I don't know what involvement I might have in it, but it would be nice to actually be able to see the stuff. I have to go and work for an African TV station to catch any glimpse of Syria. We all do what we can.
You make it sound like such an ordeal.
Anyway, and hello to you if you are a GTV viewer in in Africa there. Be joining you next Saturday for Soccer AM. That brings us to the end of today's pod. Many, many thanks to our team for making it in. Barry, Glendenning.
Thank you.
You're still well, aren't you?
I'm great.
Excellent. Tom,
you
look even
much.
Better. Thanks for coming by anyway. And Raphael Honigstein, congratulations again. I'm sure it was a real chore for you to leave the house. And
How are you?
Very well. And love to you, listeners, as well. And producer Pete. And who's? I have to say, I think, you know, producer Pete, punctuality Pete should be his name. Because this
goes up before 7 o'clock these days.
It is.
It has been noticed.
Yeah. Very good. Many regards to all of you. We'll see you on Thursday. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.